You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
According to the Center for Disease Control, each year, approximately 30,000 cases of Lyme disease are reported by state health departments. Now, however, this number doesn't reflect every case of Lyme disease that is diagnosed in the U.S. every year. In one CDC study, the researchers estimate that over 300,000 cases of Lyme disease occurs annually in the U.S. Now, I personally think the number is a bit higher, and that's because so many cases have not been diagnosed properly. Today on Wellness for Life, we have Dr. Bill Rawls, Lyme disease expert and number one best-selling author of a new book, Unlocking Lyme: Myths, Truths, and the Practical Solutions for Chronic Lyme Disease. Wow, so glad to have you here on Wellness for Life, Dr. Rawls.
Well, thank you, Suzanne. It's a real pleasure.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to tell you, thanks for giving me a copy of your book. And I'm going to, I really believe it's probably the most thorough, most comprehensive resource on Lyme that I have read. And no kidding, because it's 444 pages. Amazing.
Then I have fulfilled my purpose. Thank you.
It's amazing. It's like great. Now, so you know, tell us what inspired you to write this book on Lyme disease?
I think it's a big problem in our culture and our society right now. I had my life derailed midstream by Lyme disease. I had a busy practice in obstetrics and gynecology, and ended up with what I thought was fibromyalgia, ended up with Lyme disease. I had to totally change my lifestyle and figure out how to get well, how to overcome this thing, to get back in the stream of life, to have purpose again.
So everything that you learned about was really obviously for yourself and to get yourself well. How long ago was this?
I was in my mid-40s. I'm just about 60 now. And this was occurring when I was 45 to 50 age range. I was practicing obstetrics and gynecology in a small community, which involved taking call every second to third night. So I was literally sleep deprived for 15 years. And that adds up. It suppresses your immune system, and you end up with this. And I, like many people, probably carried the microbe in my system for a long time. I'm a very outdoors person, and I picked it up along the way. So in the course of the event, I experienced virtually every symptom of Lyme disease, and ultimately started a primary care practice to help people that were in similar situations. So everything I was learning, I was applying to my practice.
That's wonderful. Now, Lyme disease, you know, when people know about Lyme, they think about that bullseye rash and that it's a tick bite is how we get it. And what ends up affecting us is that bacteria called Borrelia burgdorferi. Excuse me. But there's a lot of other layers that people are not understanding about Lyme disease. And I'd like to have some discussions about that.
Yeah, that is part one of the book, is really carrying people from that understanding of Lyme disease, of this tick-borne illness carried by a single microbe and the single microbe causing an illness. And it's really much more complex than that. It's layers of microbes, and it's all rooted in immune dysfunction. So that is the fundamental problem going on, is chronic immune dysfunction. Whether that's due to the effect of the microbes or the effect of other factors that add up in the person's life. So it's not just an infection with a microbe. Differentiating types of microbes has been very important in my work in defining how to overcome this particular illness.
Right. You know, I've not ever been diagnosed with Lyme. I've checked it all out. But I'll tell you what I did have myself was Babesia. I'm from Korea. I lived there, and we had tons of mosquitoes. You know, I got bit all the time with mosquitoes. I really think that's where I actually got my Babesia many, many years ago. And so this is one of those co-infections that you talk about in your book.
Correct. Yes. I don't think any of these microbes are stand alone. And that's one of the things that I define in the book is the virulence of different microbes, how different microbes can affect the body. When you look at virulence, that's the ability of a microbe to cause disease. So the most virulent microbe that we have on the planet right now is Ebola virus. And in that case, you have one microbe causing one illness, which is the classic way we look at microbial illnesses, malaria, smallpox, all of these things. But when you look at Lyme disease or an infection with Babesia or so many of the other co-infections, Mycoplasma, Chlamydia, Bartonella, all of these different things, these things are lower on the virulence scale. They don't have the ability to cause the same kind of illness that, say, Ebola would. So typically, the infections are somewhat low grade, and we all have these things in our system. We've all been exposed to things like Babesia, every person on the planet. So we depend on our immune system to be very robust to take care of these constant encounters we have with things. It's not just Borrelia burgdorferi. There are 20 different forms of Borrelia, many different forms of chlamydia, mycoplasma, Babesia. So when you look at ticks, you're talking about hundreds of different microbes that can be spread by ticks as a vector. And so we're constantly exposed to these things. Our problem right now is we're living in an age of chronic immune dysfunction for a variety of different reasons. And that's affecting us as far as why so many people are getting these kinds of illnesses.
Well, it makes sense that, you know, being a large mammal, we're going to have a lot of bugs. We've got billions and billions of them in our gut. So why wouldn't we have it other areas? But the key here, as you're saying, is about the immunity. If our immune system has the ability to be able to recognize it and eradicate it on contact, then we wouldn't have these chronic illnesses, right?
Correct. It's everyone's situation is a little bit different, but I see a lot of commonality between Lyme disease, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and then the same dynamics are going on and on in the autoimmune diseases. There's a lot of overlap in symptoms. And if you look at the fundamentals of what's going on, there are a lot of similarities between these diseases. And we're seeing a lot more of this today because if you look at our world, it's filled with immune disruptors. The food we eat, the toxins that we're exposed to, the electromagnetic radiation that's surrounding you right now, we're all, you know, we have our cell phones and our computers and all of the artificial things. All of these things are affecting our immune system, and it's much more prevalent than it's ever been in human history. And I think that's the underlying factor of why we're starting to see so many more of these diseases.
Right. So it could be that a lot of us are carriers, and for the rest of our life, we'll be fine as long as we take good care of ourselves, our lifestyle's healthy, we're not toxic with an overload of chemicals and toxins and the environment, we sleep well, all of that. So let's go into them, those individuals that are not taking good care of themselves, and they're starting to get these symptoms of Lyme. Can you share some of the symptoms that are typical?
Sure. It's characteristic of Lyme and fibromyalgia and so many other chronic illnesses are what we call non-specific symptoms. A non-specific symptom doesn't specifically point to a diagnosis. Like if you break your leg, it's obvious. Something has broken your leg, right? But the symptoms that are characteristic of chronic illnesses like Lyme disease or chronic Lyme disease are brain fog, joint dysfunction, feeling flu-like all the time, eye irritation, these wide range of peculiar symptoms. I had heart irregularities. Many people have loss of mental clarity. So it's these things you can't really put a finger on, and that makes it very frustrating for the medical system to go, okay, which test do I order? How do I evaluate this thing that's all over the map?
So then, obviously, there are tests, though. You know, there are symptom survey or symptom assessment. You look at that, but also there are specific blood tests, correct?
There are blood tests, and part two of the book is talking about the testing that we have available and the limitations of that testing. Right now, our microbial testing isn't that good because when you say Lyme disease, there are people that get acute Lyme disease, but mostly what you're talking about is people that have what we would define as chronic Lyme, and that isn't necessarily a formal diagnosis. It's a phrase that people use because they're in this chronic lifetime misery that they can't seem to get out of. Most people with it don't necessarily remember that specific tick bite. So it's something that it's more diffuse. It's nebulous. It's hard to put a finger on, and that's very frustrating to physicians. When you look at microbial testing, it's all designed to test for an acute infection. When that microbe first enters the system, the immune system is first reacting to it, and the concentrations of the microbe in the blood are higher. So for acute testing, we do a pretty good job of defining the diagnosis. But by the time that microbe has been in someone's system for a long time and there's this equilibrium with the immune system, that there's just this low-grade tug of war going on, the immune indicators aren't as strong, and these microbes, unlike like a pneumonia, these microbes are in low concentrations in the body, and they're living inside cells. They're in places where the immune system and antibiotics have a hard time getting to. So you can expect testing isn't that great. It's not for chronic infections. It's going to be hard to find it. All of these things, these microbes that we call stealth microbes, are just so good at blending in with all the thousands of other species in the body that it's hard to find them. In addition to that, we're only testing for so many. Research showed that one tick species is capable of carrying 237 different genera of microbes that can infect vertebrates and cause illness. A genera is a family. So you're talking about hundreds of different microbes that can be carried by one tick. We're testing for a handful. The classic Lyme testing tests for Borrelia burgdorferi. They discover new species of Borrelia almost every year. So our testing range is very, very limited. So that's why many people that actually have chronic Lyme end up with a diagnosis of fibromyalgia or of chronic fatigue or something else.
That's such a great point. You go into detail about the testing and all the different ones in your book, which is the part two, which is, thank you so much for doing that, because, there's many different companies that do it now. There's the PCR, which looks at the DNA and all that. And even so, and I've worked with a great deal of these labs myself, I find that if the clinical signs are theirs, I often use the supplements and treatment to challenge the patient to bring it all out. You know what I mean? And then do the lab test again.
Sometimes that's useful. And I think all of the testing that we're doing has value because the more we know, the better we are. But I think people have to accept the fact that the testing, especially for chronic illness, is still somewhat limited, no matter what you do. And sometimes you just have to go beyond that to read between the lines and really understand what is happening inside the patient's body.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's go ahead and go into some of the therapies that you wrote about in your book.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part three of the book. And what I found that worked for me was herbal therapy. I tried antibiotics once I was confident that I had Lyme disease. I tried antibiotics on several occasions. It destroyed my gut flora and made me miserable, and it was obvious that that wasn't going to be a solution for me. And I ended up using Not only did I stop taking Obeqol, I changed my diet, I changed my lifestyle, I decreased my stress level, I looked at the food I was eating and where toxins were coming from, and I think all those things are essential. But I didn't start getting well until I really thoroughly embraced herbal therapy. That was essential in the whole thing. And herbs are remarkably important in this entire thing.
Which ones did you use?
A spectrum. There's a gentleman named Stephen Booner, who you may have heard of, who has written a whole series on a book about the microbes and about how herbal therapy applies to the different microbes. I started with his protocol, and I still think those herbs are just a good foundation. Andrographis, Japanese knotweed, sour sarsaparilla, cat's claw, all of these things are being commonly used in Lyme. But I think it's really important to note that there are a lot of herbs out there with antimicrobial properties. So if you told me tomorrow that all the herbs that I was typically recommending, I couldn't use any of those anymore, I would say, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I've got a whole nother set I can use. And that's the great thing about herbs. But the herbs are fundamentally different than antibiotics. When you've got something like an acute pneumonia, you're talking about a microbe that's dividing very rapidly. It's growing fast. It's consolidated in one area. They're very high concentration. And that kind of microbe will respond very, very well to conventional antibiotic therapy. You've got one single agent that is very potent. You hit it hard. 2 or 3 days later, the patient is walking out of the hospital on their way to recovery. But when you take that same potent single agent chemical and try to affect these stealth microbes that have blended in the body, are occurring in low concentrations, grow very, very, very slowly, you end up targeting all the rest of the microbes in the body before you get those things. And you end up selecting out pathogens in the gut and causing a whole spectrum of different problems. So the microbes don't respond quickly, so you end up treating the patient for months on end, which can be very destructive. The fundamental difference between synthetic antibiotics and herbs is that when you look at an herb, basically what you're getting is the biochemical spectrum of all of the substances that the herb is producing, the plant is producing, to protect itself from a wide range of microbes, protozoa, viruses, bacteria. But it's not as potent. It's not working the same way, as it's more suppressive. But because the toxicity of herbs is so low, these are things that humans have been using for thousands and thousands of years. We're well adapted to them. Because the toxicity is so low, you can use these things continually for months on end without destroying the normal flora and without causing the same problems as a synthetic antibiotic. In addition, the herbs are reducing inflammation and helping the immune system to target the microbes better. And it's balancing hormones, it's providing antioxidant support and cellular support. So when you use an herb, you get these wide range of healing properties that are astounding. And then when you blend herbs together, wow, it's really remarkable.
You get that synergistic effect of that broad spectrum and the benefits. I love herbal medicine. I use them all in my practice as well. And in your book, you go into a great deal of information about that, which is awesome. I'd like to, so once you discovered the herbs were working for you, what else did you find that were really helpful in helping? Now, you said you had fibro, so you must have had a lot of pain and fatigue in your body. Besides those herbs antimicrobial agents, what else did you use to boost that energy level and mitigate the pain that you're suffering from?
Sure. At that point, my knowledge base was not that great. I used some traditional pharmaceuticals to help with sleep, which was really disturbed for me. I was afraid to use any kind of pharmaceuticals for pain, and I think I was fortunate in that respect. I've explored quite a number of things. I think some of the cannabis derivatives, something called cannabidiol oil, has a lot of promise for controlling pain. And I go into pretty good detail of a whole range of things. I think it's important to, one thing that a message that I would love to get across to all the rest of the world, and especially our conventional medical community, is looking at therapies in perspective. And when I look at therapies, I divide them up into three different categories: restorative therapies, symptomatic therapies, and heroic therapy. Restorative therapies are things like changing your diet, detoxifying, reducing stress, getting better sleep. Those things have a very low potential for toxicity, and they work by enhancing the healing systems in the body. And I consider herbal therapy the cornerstone of that restorative foundation. Symptomatic therapies are things that really don't treat the illness. They're not enhancing wellness, but they're reducing symptoms. You're right. Early on, if you can't sleep and you're in miserable pain, it's really hard to progress in your therapy and your recovery. So things, drugs, cannabis, different alternative therapies, and I'm sure there are things that I haven't covered in the book, but I tried to cover everything I could cover and really give the person an idea of what are the drugs you can trust and what are the ones you should stay away from and how you can use them safely. That makes up the second tier of therapy, which would be symptomatic. And generally, a lot of people are going to need symptomatic therapy in the beginning, but they will need it less as things progress. The restorative foundation, those kinds of therapies don't necessarily treat symptoms, but the symptoms gradually get better as healing takes place in the body. And then the last tier is what I call heroic therapy. Heroic therapies are things that artificially, abruptly disrupt that disease process. So when you look at conventional medicine, that's mainly what we do. And sometimes it's really appropriate. If you had a heart attack or a stroke or broke your leg or fell off a ladder, you would want every heroic therapy that mainstream medicine could put toward getting you back on your feet. And for those things, we do an exceedingly good job. But when you apply that acute, artificial, potent therapy to a chronic illness, it just doesn't work very well. So I reserve those heroic therapies for when that restorative base and the symptomatic, it's just not quite getting the patient there. I like to use the analogy of a leaky dam. You've got a dam and it's got water behind it and the structure is failing and it's got cracks and holes. To really fix that problem, you've got to repair the whole dam. You've got to restore the structure. But if the leaks and the holes are so bad that it's getting ready to go, you need to do something heroic to patch those holes and patch those cracks so that you can come back around and repair that structure. So that's how I like to think about heroic therapies. There is a place for them, but if you use them just as your only therapy, the toxicity of them is going to often get away and of the recovery.
Mm-hmm. That's well said, Dr. Rawls. The three different types of therapies, and that's your philosophy. I love all that you're saying. You know, I wish I can talk longer. We can talk about a lot of things, of what you're doing, how you're helping people, and how this book is going to help thousands and thousands of people who have these strange conditions and strange symptoms, and it may be from Lyme. The book is available now. And your website called RawlsMD.com.
Correct.
That's actually a great resource as well. But your new book, Unlocking Lyme, Myths, Truths, and Practical Solutions for Chronic Lyme Disease, it's available on Amazon, right?
Correct. And it'll be available on all the other bookstores fairly soon, too.
Oh, that's great. Thanks so much. Really appreciate you being here. All right, great information. I've put a link on my Wellness for Life radio show page on Radio MD. This is Dr. Suzanne Bennett sharing natural strategies for ultimate health and wellness right here on Radio MD. Until next time, stay well.